You're listening to the Courageous Life Podcast, helping you develop courage and resilience in a perilous and unpredictable world. This is your host, Sean Mitzel. I'm coming to you from the mountains of northern Idaho. I'm glad you're with us. In today's podcast, we'll be talking about Ebola and what a measured response to it should be, or what it will look like. And for our main topic, we'll be talking about homestead time management. How do we manage all those things we have to do in an effective manner? And this really ties into yesterday's topic of homestead project planning. In today's worldview segment, we're going to talk about Ebola. Ebola has been in the news for quite some time now, and there's been some recent developments that are concerning, and they're just things that we need to keep our eye on. Again, we shouldn't be panicking, but it is definitely prudent to watch and prepare. So we have the second case in the United States of Ebola, and I have in front of me an article where a professor from Purdue University, his name's David Sanders, Professor Sanders, is making some kind of bold claims. And these are the same claims that a lot of people were making a few weeks ago and were labeled tinfoil hat wearers, crazies, conspiracy theorists, you know, ridiculous, the whole nine yards. And that was those that say, hey, there is a possibility that this could end up going airborne. And that's exactly what this professor is saying. And he happens to be an expert in the Ebola virus. So again, he's a professor from Purdue University. He's studied Ebola since 2003. And it's, even though it's been shown to be normally transferred through bodily fluids, he believes it could quickly become airborne. And a couple of quotes from him is, it can enter the lung from the airway side, Sanders said. So this argues that Ebola is primed to have respiratory transmission. We need to be taking this into consideration, he continued. What if? This is not a crazy what if. This is not a wild what if. Okay, so we just need to keep an eye on this. We need to just be watching it. Again, it's important to note that just a couple of weeks ago, if you were to say something like this, you would have been labeled crazy, much like a lot of conspiracy theories, quote unquote. When they are conspiracy theories, the people that are saying them are generally labeled to be, you know, generally crazy or tinfoil hat wearers. Later on, if that thing ends up becoming true, it seems like by that time everybody's used to it and they're just like, oh, well, it's no big deal. Okay, so again, we're not panicking. We're not saying that Ebola is going to become a pandemic that's going to kill off 70% of the population or anything like that. We just want to keep an eye on it. That's all. I was also saw on Facebook, Michael Ferris, who's the president of Homeschool Legal Defense and somebody who argues in front of the Supreme Court on a regular basis. I was talking, he's done much work with the CDC on Lyme disease and some other diseases like that. And something he said on his page is that the CDC is a highly political organization that uses science when convenient. I know that their pronouncements regarding certain issues regarding Lyme are inaccurate. Therefore, I am following the scientific method when I say that this source of information not to be assumed to be trustworthy regarding Ebola. Okay, so he's just saying, watch what they're saying. It's not what maybe not what it appears to be. Okay, and that's what we've been saying on this podcast for a little while now. It's just to be skeptical of the talking points that are coming out of the government. All right, so we should talk about just real quick, what are a few things that we can do? All right, so we know we're not going to panic. We know we're going to watch. We know we're going to keep our ears open. We know we're going to be checking sources. We know when the CDC talks that we're going to be skeptical. We're going to look for other sources to either corroborate what they're saying or perhaps debunk it. Because again, we were told by the CDC that there's no way this virus essentially transmits the same way that AIDS does? Well, obviously it doesn't. Okay, we wouldn't be required to mask up, and also they would be requiring heavier protection levels than they are, and so you wonder why they're not. So even though everybody's in, I think it's called level 3 protection with this, a lot of people are saying that the CDC should have a while ago required a higher level of protection against this. Obviously, it's more than just being passed through bodily fluids. So what can we do? Well, let's talk about some basic things that will help us, regardless of whether or not this thing goes crazy or not. Okay, so as people who are into preparedness, which is simply just preparing for things that can and do happen, food storage is one. And the reason I say food storage is in case this thing does go crazy, the bottom line is people are going to isolate themselves, and they should isolate themselves in order to protect themselves and their families. You should have some basic protective equipment. Do you even have just masks? Okay, again, not saying that this will do this, but there's no reason not to have food storage. There's no reason not to have a plan of isolation if required, and there's no reason not to have protective equipment. But I'll tell you, here's the best point that I'm going to make on this today, and that is to build your immune system. And I know a lot of people will poo-poo that idea and say that's ineffective, but that's the difference between our sick care system that we have in America today and true healthcare. So we have the best doctors in the world when it comes to trauma, when it comes to conducting surgeries, things like that. We are below par when it comes to disease prevention. We simply throw medicine at the problem. We issue drugs for the vast majority of quote-unquote illnesses. So we want to build our body's natural defenses to put it into a position where it can fight off things like this, or just fight off regular sickness, or if you do get sick, that you can combat it. And so that's what we're going to talk about here for just a minute or two. So what are some things that we can do to improve our immune system? Well, let's talk about our diet. We're going to talk about things we can put in our body, and we're going to talk about things we can keep out of our body. And again, this is good for us regardless of Ebola. So what are some things that we can put in our body? These are mainly antibacterial, but again, they help build the overall immune system. So even though Ebola is a virus, these help. Garlic, ginger, peppermint, calendula, cranberry, echinacea, colloidal silver, things like this. If you can increase these types of things, it will help your body come along a long way towards improved immunity. There's also some antiviral type herbs that you can take if you have access to elderberry tinctures or things like that. Olive leaf, oregano oil, licorice root. There's also some other herbs that are beneficial to take. Ginseng, dandelion root, milk thistle. All these kinds of things just help our body to be able to optimally work. And so there's nothing wrong with taking them. Another great thing is to eat fermented foods. So kombucha, apple cider vinegar, sauerkraut, things like this help build our systems. Now, those are some things that we can put in our body in addition to just eating a healthy diet. Eating good meats, vegetables, nuts, seeds, some fruit, little sugar. Minimize the starches, minimize those types of things. But in addition to that, we really want to minimize our sugar intake, especially refined sugars. You know, these are immune suppressors. So I'm not saying don't eat any sugar. I'm saying reduce the amount you eat down to very little. Same thing with alcohol. Nothing wrong with drinking alcohol, but we need to keep it at a very moderate level. Dairy, minimize the amount of dairy you're eating. Now I would put one caveat in that I would not put raw milk into that category, and I'm gonna have to do an entire show on that alone to talk about the health properties with raw milk. But you definitely want to minimize the pasteurized and the ultra pasteurized milk that you get from the store, even organic milk that you get from the store. Same thing with a lot of your glutens, corn, soy, and wheat. We want to minimize processed foods and minimize stress in our lives because we know how detrimental that is to that. And with this, these are just some basic things that you can do. We can look at our diet, we can look at just basic preparedness in our food and water storage, and do we have the appropriate protective equipment, whether Ebola is a problem or a chemical spill in a plant nearby, or just a high amounts of dust in the air, or there happens to be a forest fire. These types of things where you're just trying to keep stuff out of your mouth and nasal passage, just a basic mask, things like that. And you have to have a plan. You have to be prepared to isolate yourself and your family. And I know that sounds extreme, but again, it's just a plan. Hopefully nobody ever has to execute it. And with that, I want to read something for you. It's real quick. It's just about one paragraph, and it's from A.W. Pink's The Sovereignty of God. And it helps us put this in perspective, because we can look at this virus and we can become fearful and we can worry, but we don't need to, especially as Christians. But I think this is a helpful passage of his book, The Sovereignty of God, again by A.W. Pink. It says, "In conclusion, it remains to point out that it is the responsibility of every man to use the means which God has placed to his hand. An attitude of fatalistic inertia, because I know that God has irrevocably decreed whatsoever comes to pass, is to make a sinful and hurtful use of what God has revealed for the comfort of my heart. The same God who has decreed that a certain end shall be accomplished has also decreed that the end shall be attained through and as the result of his own appointed means. God does not disdain the use of means, nor must I. For example, God has decreed that while the earth remaineth, seed time and harvest shall not cease." And that comes from Genesis 8:22. "But that does not mean man's plowing of the ground and sowing of the seed are needless. No, God moves men to do those very things, blesses their labors, and so fulfills his own ordination. Let us know that God is sovereign, and let us move forward with boldness." For today's main topic, we're going to talk about homestead time management. Yesterday, we talked about homestead project planning, so it seemed like a natural segue into time management. So, how do we actually put that plan into effect on a day-to-day basis? Because you can become overwhelmed when you look at that overall project plan, especially if you're doing a project plan for your overall homestead. You come up with a 1 or 2 year or 5 year plan for your homestead or your life, that can be quickly overwhelming. Okay, so once you do that planning, you break it down into manageable steps, and then you execute that plan through your daily work. And that's why time management is so important, because if you're not careful, you're going to have work overload. You're not going to be effective, and you won't achieve as much as you can. Because I think if we're all honest, we would have to admit that we can achieve a whole lot more than we do day to day. If we really did an analysis of what we actually did throughout the day, I think we'd be shocked, because we all probably think we work really hard. But the reality is, That there's a lot of time wasters out there, and a lot of it's just due to bad time management. And so hopefully, what we're going to do today is just talk about a few things that will help you in that regard. And I'm going to try and tailor this towards a homestead, but it'll obviously be beneficial for those of you that are not on a homestead right now, hope to one day, or just you're on a very small lot, but you still want to learn these types of things. And so I'm at the end, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you some of the techniques that we actually use in our house every day. But again, what is time management? Well, it's just effective use of your time because you only have a certain amount of it. It allows you to achieve more. You're more effective and efficient throughout your day, and so that you can get more of the things done that need to get done. Now, this assumes that you have goals and you've maybe you're in the middle of a project, so it's assuming those types of things. And if you haven't done that, then you need to do that. So it might even be helpful to go back and listen to the project planning where we talk about setting goals and objectives. And so, as I said, we go through here and we kind of understand the benefits of having a good time management. So we get greater productivity and efficiency, less stress and advancement. And what I mean by advancement with regards to a homestead is that, again, think about that overall plan, especially if you listened to yesterday's, you know, we have a lot. We have a bold plan in place for this property, and as a demonstration site, as a place that can feed up to 20 people because we plan on bringing in interns and those kinds of things, etc. If we're time managed on a day-to-day basis is good, we're going to advance in that plan. Okay, it's not about being busy, because you can be busy and not get a whole lot done. And so those are greater opportunities for us and allows us to be more productive. And what it does is it avoids inefficient workflow, poor quality. And of course, I think everybody knows you're much more stressed out when you feel frantic all the time. And something I like to say a lot is that the timeline at which you complete a particular thing determines on whether it is just a regular task or it's an emergency. And emergencies are stressful, so we want to avoid those. So good time management, good planning will alleviate a lot of that. And like I said, I'm going to fill you in at the very end here on what we actually do. And there's many ways to do it. Certainly not perfect the way we do it. But it's effective for us, at least right now, and that it may change. But you got to set goals and you got to prioritize, okay? Otherwise, you could have good time management. You could be very busy, but if you're not applying that towards the right things, then you're still not being as productive as you can. Okay, you guys, hopefully you guys understand what I'm saying there. So again, you could be effective in your time management. You could be really busy and you can accomplish a lot, but if it wasn't prioritized, then it's not effective. And so setting goals and sitting down and actually prioritizing what you need to do is an integral part of that. How about managing interruptions? Well, I tell you, this is really important, and to be quite honest, it gets me a lot. Okay, so do you check email throughout the day 10 different times, as opposed to setting, say, two time periods where you're going to jump on email and, okay, for 30 minutes without any other distractions, I'm going to check email, respond to emails, whatever it is, you need to plan these things out. Because if you're going back and forth between email, between the phone, between surfing the web, between doing this or that, you're not going to be very effective. And I think we all get caught by this one. So managing interruptions. If you have a way to turn the phones off for a certain period of time because you're concentrating on a certain thing. That's good. The other thing that gets us is procrastination. Well, we simply just don't do those things that we really don't want to do. We'll gravitate towards doing the things we want to do. But the reality is that stress will start building upon you more and more the more you procrastinate. So don't be a procrastinator. So we have to schedule this stuff out. Scheduling is important, prioritizing that schedule. And one of the most important things that we can talk about is a to-do list. And if you get nothing else from this, understand that a to-do list will make you highly efficient, highly effective, even if you do nothing else. It's like the thing that gets you 70% down the road, and all the other little tools and techniques will get you the other 30%. So again, if you do nothing else, start keeping a to-do list and start knocking it out day by day. And we'll talk about that a little bit more because I have found a good way to do a to-do list. At least that works for me, and it may work for you. But before that, I want to cover a couple of pitfalls that a lot of people get caught up in, even if they're trying to improve their time management. So the first mistake is failing to keep a to-do list. Okay, that's the biggest mistake right there. If you don't keep a to-do list, you're just flailing. You're just putting out fires and just moving from fire to fire without any effectiveness at all. Not setting personal goals. Got to set goals. And again, that helps guide you in your daily tasks. Not prioritizing. Again, you could be very busy. You could even have good time management. If you don't prioritize, you're not going to get the things done that you actually need to get done. Failing to manage distractions. Talked about that earlier. Think of email. Do you set particular email times, or do you just go back and forth and back and forth? Or when you see it pop up on the computer, you go over and you check your email. Procrastination, of course. Taking on too much. Wow, you know what? I struggle with this one from time to time, that's for sure. If I bite off more than I can chew, I say, oh, I can handle this, that, and the other thing. And a lot of times that'll bite you. And then you have to figure out, okay, I need to regroup, relook at this, and either prioritize it or figure out a way to shed some tasks or some projects. And we've had to do that a lot in our lives because we have a tendency to go after it. We have a tendency to make ourselves really busy. And that's not always a good thing. And mistake number seven, thriving on busy. So again, you can be busy and not get anything done. And I think you all know what I'm talking about there. Number eight is interesting. There might be some disagreement here, but multitasking. So some people will claim that multitasking does not save any time and that you should concentrate on one thing at a time and focus. I find that to be true, at least for me. I do better when I focus on one thing at a time. But I can't say that for all people that they are not effective in multitasking. So you have to figure that out for yourself. Another mistake is not taking breaks, just burning yourself out. That's not effective as well. You have to have that downtime. You have to be able to let your brain take a rest, take a quick walk, grab a cup of coffee, just sit and relax, just for even for 5 minutes or 10 minutes. And then ineffectively scheduling your tasks. So again, we talked about scheduling and how important scheduling is. But if you do it ineffectively, if you know you've got to run around and do errands, do you do it in a manner that makes sense for the route? Do you do, you know, I mean, are you running back and forth and wasting time that way by just not thinking through, okay, if I do this before this, well, then I'm going to have to go back on the other side of town when I can do A, then B and C, and it becomes most effective. So you have to really look at that, especially on a homestead where you live out in the boonies. Oh, again, I've said this before. We can't just jump in the truck and go make a quick run somewhere in town. That's we don't do that. We plan it out, and we because we have to. So it's important to really just kind of step back and say, okay, how productive am I? What do I really get done? And I think, and again, if you were willing and you wrote down for a week everything that you did and just really kind of mapped out your schedule and just kind of wrote down what you did, I think you'd find lots of gaps. And so it's important to do that, to assess, or maybe you know that off the bat, so you're just looking for ways to get better. And that's good. So we have to be organized in our schedule. We have to organize in our to-do list, organized in our email, organized in our files. There's lots of things that go into this that will help us to be more effective. You have to have a good attitude in order to get these things done. And it covers things like, hey, I'm gonna do that thing that I really don't want to do that I normally would procrastinate on. You know what? I'm gonna put that as my first priority. That's the first thing I'm gonna do in the morning so I can knock that thing off on that to-do list. Maybe there's some things that you need to delegate to someone else because either you can't do it, maybe you've made yourself too busy, or it would be a better task for someone else. So that is an art in itself to be able to delegate properly. And remember, you can delegate, but you can't delegate the responsibility of it if you are the one on the dime. Information systems, there's so much into this that it really goes back into organizing your life, organizing your files. That right there, I tell you, it's been the bane of my existence. I finally kind of come to terms with a system that works, and there's probably better ways to do it, but I have a way of organizing my files on my computer that makes sense to me, that I can find information quickly. That's really what's important. But you got to come up with these productive systems in order to have effective time management. You know, so I talked about the logging what you're actually doing, and this is a great assessment tool that will help you along the way. But the real key here, if you want to get down to the brass tacks, is to-do lists. And in particular, what I use is what's called a closed list. And this, over time, has worked very, very well for me. In fact, I've used a closed list daily for several years. Now, I'm not saying every single day that I've done that, but the majority of work days that I've, whether on the homestead or in the Marine Corps, I've used a closed to-do list. And what a closed to-do list is simply a to-do list. It's a listing of all the things you have to do that day, and then I put a line underneath it, and that is the end of my to-do list. Otherwise, you have this never-ending list that just keeps getting added to and added to and added to, and it just never ends. Mine ends every day, and everything that pops up after that goes into really two categories. It comes up into the category of I have to do it for whatever reason, whether you work for somebody and they want you to do it, or it's an emergency, like a legitimate emergency, or it's just something that has to be done today that we just didn't plan this out well enough. It came up and it has to be done. But everything else, even if it pops up and it's like, oh yeah, I forgot, I need to do that. Guess what? That goes under that line. Write it down under that line, and that becomes part of tomorrow's to-do list. Okay, so again, the idea of a closed list, it has an end, it has a beginning, and it has an end. Most people's to-do lists never end. And in a lot of cases, they just stop using them because it's so depressing to have a never-ending to-do list. Mine ends every day. And hopefully I complete everything of all of those tasks that day, but oftentimes I won't. I might have one or two or three of those left. Well, those also will go on tomorrow's list. So they, at the end of the day or the next morning, it's just generally how I do it. or how I've done it in the past, is I put those, everything that has popped up that day goes under the line, and then everything that I didn't complete that day either goes under on the list or it goes back into the calendar, because something popped up and I'm not going to be able to do that till next week, for example. And that brings up the next point, which is integrating a to-do list and a calendar. And these are the two, really the two things that will really help you. If you can work these together well, that will help you with time management immensely. So do you, if you maintain an electronic calendar or a written calendar, it doesn't matter. It is effective if it's used. Okay, if it's used. If you don't use it, well, then it's worthless. It tells you when Columbus Day is. It tells you when Thanksgiving is. But if you do use it, if you're putting everything out, then these lists or this to-do list and the calendar work well together. So as you sit down that morning or the night before, all the experts recommend the night before, but what I've just found that I end up doing it that morning and it works fine. So whatever you want to do, I sit down that morning, I've got the start of my to-do list because it comes from everything under the line that I wrote down yesterday. And then I'll either, those things I didn't get done, go on it. I'll cross check that with my calendar to find out what I have coming up. And then I take that list after I've bounced it off the calendar to make sure I know what's going on that day, any appointments, any hard scheduled times. And then I come up with a schedule. And that could be as simply as prioritizing that, writing in times next to that. Or something fancy like a printout that's got the daily schedule, it's got a task list, and it's got, say, a weekly on the other side as well. Those are very effective to use and works well. Now, that I use that every day while I was in the Marine Corps, and it was effective. What I do on the homestead now and with my family, because we are really really working together. All of us are really working together well. But if we were just kind of all going in separate directions, we wouldn't get anything done. And there's a lot to do, and so it's important to be organized, especially on a homestead. The great thing about a calendar, I'll just mention one more thing about the calendar, and that has carried over from the Marine Corps to here. Is that it's collaborative. Everybody in my family has access to the calendar and can input the calendar. At least everybody who has things to input into the calendar can input stuff, edit stuff, read it all. It's not controlled by one person. That may be effective so that there's no changes, but it's not effective in that it's not collaborative. There's things that Monica knows that I don't, and she'll put it in, and it'll pop up, and like, okay, yeah, that's right. We're picking up raw milk this morning. We got to drop off our jars, or well, I need to meet a client for a property analysis, or that was the day we planned on processing wood, whatever the case may be. So that's why it's effective. When multiple people have access to it, if everybody's using it. Again, that's the key to these things, to a calendar especially, is that everyone's actually using it. So what we do is we have an electronic calendar and we use Evernote. And Evernote is a great way to collaborate on to-do lists, on saving a certain links or files, etc. From the web or whatever the case may be. So we have several notebooks if you're familiar with Evernote. It would be nothing more, it'd be the same thing as a shared folder, a shared drive, SharePoint, however you want to say it. Evernote is that thing as well. So we use that. We have a joint to-do list. Now that can get a little bit messy, and we don't put some of the minor things that each one has to do, but we have basically a household to-do list, and it's assigned to people and it's closed, just like I talked about. We bounce it off our calendar to make sure we're hitting all our hard times, and then that's how we come up with our list. And to be, I'll be perfectly honest with you, we have a morning meeting. We have a morning meeting where we divvy out tasks. This, it's like, hey, all right, before school, everybody needs to do their morning chores or activities or tasks. They do school, and then after school, there's more work to be done. And that's life on the homestead. And then for Monica and I, it's the same thing. So we're knocking out tasks like that. So that's how we do it. Now, a couple of details on that. If something pops up and we know we need to do it that day, and let's say it comes up that day, well, guess what? It goes underneath the line, right? So electronically, think about it as underneath the line. It goes underneath the line, it's going to go on tomorrow's to-do list. Okay. And by the way, we have a separate notebook or folder, if you will, called to-do list on Evernote. And we add a note each day, a couple days out, for to-do lists for that day. Okay. And so we can go back and track, and we can go back 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and look and see what all we have accomplished. All right, and that's important too, because a lot of people will just write their to-do list on a piece of paper and throw it away. I recommend you keep your to-do list, put it in a little notebook, a little folder, electronically, whatever the case may be, so you can go back and see everything you've accomplished. It's rewarding. Okay, so if it goes that day, comes up that day, obviously if it has to be done that day, that goes on, it'll go on the list as, I mean, or it'll just be something that has to get done. All right, we don't like that because that's just it shows a lack of planning in most cases. But if it doesn't have to, it goes underneath the line, and we put it on for tomorrow's to-do list. If anything pops up within 48 hours of wherever we're at, that's any kind of hard time. So like a meeting, something that requires us to be somewhere with someone at a particular time, goes on the to-do list. All right. So it might be tomorrow's to-do list. It might be the day after's to-do list, but that's where it goes. If it's outside of 48 hours, it goes on the calendar. And we try and get everything on the calendar. Okay. We try and get everything on the calendar. But if it's inside of 48 hours, there's really no point in putting it on the calendar because we've already started that to-do list. Okay. So hopefully you're getting what I'm saying. So we work to-do lists, we bounce it off of a calendar. And that's kind of the main things that we do to stay organized on the homestead and get a lot done. We really do get a lot done. I mean, just the 2.5 weeks that I've been out here in northern Idaho, we've gotten a lot done. Everybody's working hard, and getting, plenty of downtime as well, to enjoy this area and all of that. So that closed to-do list, I'm a big fan of it. You might try it, see if it works for you. Let me know how you like it. I like the idea of an electronic calendar, and I really like the idea of a collaborative electronic calendar. And if a family of four all have their own calendars and everything else, you know how quickly those things get messed up. There's many other ways to do this. But this is one way. It seems to work for us, or at least it has been for now. It'll likely change over time as our workload changes, as things change out here on the homestead. But that's what we're doing. So I just thought I would share that with you today, and I'll just provide you with one last, I guess, principle when it comes to time management. This is an important one as well. I struggle with this at times, but it's one of the first things I'll do as far as give people advice if they come to me and they're just like, and I just can't get anything done. And a lot of times, the people that just can't get anything done tend to be perfectionists, and they tend to take a project and they have to do it perfectly. Okay, and I call this the 80% rule. And that is, and I'm going to give you an example. It takes me 8 hours to put together a brief of some kind of class. It takes me 8 hours to do that. And that class then is 80% complete. And I don't mean that it's shoddy or poorly done. I mean, it's 80% complete. It's a good class. It's solid. But if it takes me another 8 hours to get to 90% and another 8 hours to get to 95%, why would I continue to work on the class when I could spend 8 hours and get the 80% out of it and then move on for the next 8 hours and get something else to 80% as opposed to just getting that one project to 90%? I hope that makes sense. Our scripture today comes from Matthew chapter 5, verse 6. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. As Christians, we desire above all else to be conformed to the mind of God.
That's the podcast for today. Don't forget to visit us at thecourageouslifepodcast.com. Please leave us some comments and questions. Also, like us on Facebook, The Courageous Life Podcast. Thanks for listening. Semper Fidelis and Soli Deo Gloria.